Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning, Amy Jacobson here. Honored to be with John Anthony, who's in for Dan Proft today. How you doing, partner?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
All right. Did you check your lotto tickets? Did you check your Mega Millions? Because the numbers drawn were 7, 29, 60, 63, 66, and Mega Ball 15. Any winners?
Didn't win. Didn't get it. Darn it. Next time.
Well, since then, since I'm in Utah and the neighboring state of Nevada, neither of these states, you can buy Mega Millions tickets. You can't buy lottery tickets at all. Believe it or not. You can gamble your face off and lose your house, and your girlfriend and your car, but you cannot buy lottery tickets there. So everybody goes to Arizona. So I asked Justin Kosick, our technical producer, yesterday to buy me my tickets. And do I still owe you the $2?
No, I'll forgive you the $2 if you give me, Beth and I were talking about this, and I figure about 10 million, maybe 10 to 40 million of the winnings, I'm okay.
You're cheap.
You know what? We figured 40 million was 10% of it last night or something around there. So that's, you know, that's fine.
You did all that work though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? 40 million, that would set me off perfectly. Okay. If you want to give me more, I will not turn it down.
Yes. Well, you bought one for yourself, right? Didn't you buy one for everybody on the show, just like the Raising Cane's founder did? He bought 50,000 Mega Million tickets.
Whoa.
One for each worker.
And they all lost.
So, what's he going to do next time? Is he going to do, like, drop another 100K? Do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Did you buy a ticket last night? Did you ever play the lotto? Is this enough to convince you? Because the jackpot right now went from 830 million to guess what?
Oh.
You ready?
I think I know.
What do you think it is?
It has to be a billion.
Yep, $1.02 billion.
Oh.
And the highest jackpot ever was back October 23rd, 2018, at $1.537 billion. But, I mean, with inflation and everything, I mean, I'd be happy with $830.
How much of that will Illinois take?
$30 million. I know, wouldn't that be funny? Because one of my girlfriends always said, if I ever win the lotto, I want to track and see where my taxes on that go.
Yeah.
Like, what exactly is that helping out? You know, kind of like Ken Griffin when he gives the city $200 million in personal income taxes every year.
Wow.
And he's moving to a state where he doesn't have to pay that anymore.
Well, remember, it was originally designed to help offset education.
Oh, well, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and then what happened? Greedy politicians. Wasn't that what the toll road was about?
Mm-hmm.
When we were kids, they started, you know, this is just going to be temporary. When it was 5 cents, and I remember it grew to 10, and then 15, which is always hard to find the change.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you know what, let's just make it a quarter.
Yeah. That's why you never open the door to politicians for any tax, ever.
Really?
Anytime they want to say this is temporary, never believe them, ever.
So did you buy a ticket?
I did not, but it's $1 billion now. I will buy a few.
Okay.
to all the people out there say, you religious, don't vote. No, please. I got 1.something billion reasons why to spend a dollar or two.
Well, with inflation right now, okay, so listen to this, because inflation's, you know, the highest it's been in 40 years. The average Illinoisan needed a pay raise of $5,920 to keep up with inflation during the past 12 months.
Wow.
That's if you have a family of four, but you have a family of 12, right?
Yeah, actually so, 22.
So your price doubled. So you're out $12,000 out of just because of inflation.
Yeah.
Because of all of this. So
well, my grandmother had 19 kids.
What?
Yeah, 19.
Is that your mom's mom? Or
my mom's mom. I don't know my dad. I just found my dad's people.
Oh, that's right. How's your book going, by the way?
It's going good.
And what's the working title?
I haven't come up with a title yet.
All right.
I haven't come up with a title yet.
But you recently ran into, you heard the story about your father your whole life, but how did you find his family?
Ancestry, actually. I took the Ancestry DNA test.
All right. What did you discover?
And I found my family and found out that they're all mostly from Effingham, Robinson, Illinois, Crawford County area.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very eye-opening experience to go through that ancestry.
Have you met any of your half-siblings?
I have not met any siblings yet. I did meet my aunt, who actually a month after I visited her died.
Oh.
Yeah, and my cousin, my oldest cousin, still lives down in Robinson, Illinois.
Wow.
I get to see her every now and again.
Okay, but back to your mom and one of 19 children. How did they live in the city?
Well, yeah.
How do you live? I could barely fit 3 grown boys in my house, let alone, and I don't have a big house. I have one of the original A-frames left in the city. But how do you work 19 kids in the city of Chicago?
Well, not all of them lived in the house with her. So,
okay.
Yeah. Like my Uncle Richard, who's the oldest, I think he was killed at a dice game with Sam Cooke.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. He was a gambler. Yeah. Hustler.
Oh, yeah. So maybe you shouldn't be buying a lotto ticket.
Well, see, that, well,
because it'll lead to other things.
Please, $1 billion, I'll take my chance. But you know what happens to everybody that wins it, you know, turmoil hits their life. Almost every lottery winner or big lottery winner, they've all had to deal with all type of crap in their life.
Oh, yeah. Like some of them ended up dying.
Yeah.
And then people coming out of the woodworks asking you. They did, I remember 2020 did a story and they showed this one woman who, I think she won, $40 million, which, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Not compared to $1.02 billion. And the letters this woman received on a daily basis asking for help was by the, it was just buckets of mail every single day. Because they found out who she was. In certain states, you don't have to show your identity.
Yeah.
Or reveal your identity, excuse me. So, you know, certain states, Illinois, you don't have to reveal your identity. You have to come forward, but you can wear a costume or a bandana.
What?
Or sunglasses. Oh, yeah.
See, I would like that here.
Read the back of the ticket. What would your disguise be?
I wouldn't want anybody to know who I am.
Well, what would your disguise be?
Maybe a Jason mask. Michael Myers mask, maybe. I don't know.
Well, back to that Raising Cane's founder, though, buying everyone tickets, there's a caveat with it. Because then whoever wins, because each person didn't actually get the ticket. He bought the tickets on their behalf and then didn't hand them out to each employee.
Oh.
So it was a pool. So whoever won, then they'd split, you know, each employee would get between $2,000 to $3,000 each.
That's it?
I guess that's what, if you did the math and if you do the, you know, the cash out. So I don't know.
I'd rather buy
Todd
my own
Grace
ticket.
Is his name. Yeah, and he said, buying 50,000 lottery tickets is harder than you think. Hoping to share the winning jackpot with our 50,000 Raising Cane's crew. It's a good publicity stunt, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't buy that kind of airtime on TV stations across the country.
Yeah, I'm still a Chick-fil-A fan, so.
Oh, I know, I'm not a Raising Cane's fan.
No, I tried it.
So did I. My kids love it. Yeah. I'm not into it. I don't know what it is. I think it's, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm a Chick-fil-A guy.
Y'all know whose son works for Raising Cane's, right?
No.
That would be my number two. He works for Raising Cane's corporate.
I love Raising Cane's.
Yeah, sure you do now. You frickin' flip-flopper.
Hey, I'm going to be honest. I still don't.
I am a former Democrat, now. So I'm a flip-flopper.
Hey, it's a different Chick-fil-A sandwiches. Raising Cane's has zero sandwiches.
Right.
They'll never have a sandwich.
And they need spicy chicken. They don't have any spicy chicken.
They don't need it.
Oh, come on.
They don't need it, dude. They don't need it. They are so in the pocket right now. They are the fastest growing restaurant chain in the country, maybe the world right now. And they are just going great guns.
So what did your son say about getting the lotto ticket?
They're excited about it. This is what Todd Graves does. And on a general level, usually below the fold of the newspaper, or no one ever knows what Graves does. He started this on his own back at Louisiana State University with his first restaurant. and has just grown this into an incredibly good organization.
Yeah.
And, Ian works on the corporate level for Raising Cane's. And they were excited about it because Graves does this kind of stuff for the entire crew, the entire teams, down to the guy who hands you your stuff at the window at the drive-thru, and he does it all the time.
Yeah. So it goes from that all the way up to corporate.
Yeah.
I wonder if he bought himself a few lottery tickets. What's his follow-up going to be?
I don't know. Mike? I don't know. He does, you know, Ice T's doing their ads now.
Yeah,
so, you
I
know,
saw that.
And it's my son tried to actually buy a cardboard cutout of Ice T, a plane ticket home the other day, and got denied. But Graves does a lot of good things for the organization. As long as he stays in contact with it, they'll be in fairly decent hands.
Yeah. And where are their headquarters based?
Their headquarters is in Dallas. Again, they started in Baton Rouge, which is where Graves went to school at LSU. Mm. And then eventually the corporate design function went to Dallas, just easier to run out of there. And Graves doesn't even have his hands day-to-day in it anymore. Oh. They have a chief operating officer and other folks who run the day-to-day, the restaurant operation.
You know how I don't trust the mainstream media? I trust you. But was that true that each employee, they didn't actually get their hands on the ticket?
Bought them, and Graves bought them out of his own pocket. This wasn't a corporate purchase. He bought them out of his own, $100,000, bought them out of his own pocket, and it took 8 hours to print all the tickets. 8 hours. And, yeah, he was just going to divide it up among all 50,000 crew members.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If one of those tickets won, then each of the 50,000 employees of Raising Cane's would get a slice.
Nice.
And which, I mean, one ticket's got to be worth something, don't you think? Out of 50,000 tickets?
I don't think John's math is too far off. It's $2,000 to $5,000, something like that, for each employee.
Yeah.
And,
that's a nice bonus.
You'll be responsible for your own taxes on that, my friends.
Oh, exactly.
But, you know.
Well, the odds of winning are one in 302.6 million.
Woo.
So, yes, the odds are definitely stacked against you. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
All right, good Wednesday morning. His valiant return to Washington, D.C. Former President Trump went back there after 552 days after leaving office. And he spoke at the America First Policy Institute. And it sounds to me, John Anthony, like he's going to be running for president.
He's definitely running.
Country is now a cesspool of crime. We have blood, death, and suffering on a scale once unthinkable. We got millions and millions more votes. What a disgrace it was, but we may just have to do it again.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Are you all in? Are you in? You never Trumpers? Are you maybe now in for President Trump? You never Trumpers, are you still that never Trumpers? And the Trump fans, I mean, they want him so badly to run. What do you want him to do, John Anthony?
If he runs, I'm with him.
Okay.
I like DeSantis, but if Trump runs, I'm going with Trump.
Why? What do you like about Trump?
Look at our nation. Look at our nation. Look at the world when he was in office. You know, they may not have liked him, but the world respected him because they thought he was crazy. And they weren't willing to do what the world... I mean, look at Joe Biden. He went to Israel. He went to Saudi Arabia. Came back with his tail tucked between his legs. You know, I mean, they wouldn't have done that to Trump.
No.
You know?
And Trump would have gotten Brittany Griner back a long time ago.
Yeah.
We would have not have had that disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Correct.
Which made the whole world laugh in America when people are hanging on the plane as
fuel prices,
it's leaving.
Fuel prices wouldn't have gone as high as they've gone. You know, because I mean, we were the number one exporter. You know, we were doing really well. I mean, we opened up Keystone. I mean, you looked at the Arctic. We were looking to drill in the Arctic. I mean, and then Joe Biden comes in and just shuts everything down.
Day one, shuts it down. And the irony is, all those union pipe fitters in Wisconsin, there's about 10,000 of them. They all voted for Biden, and they all lost their jobs.
Yeah.
His first day on the job.
Yeah.
Lost it.
Yeah.
So Fox News, which I don't know if they're in Trump's camp or not, or they're just, you know, taking an outside look at what's going on. But they went to Maricopa County. You know, that's where Phoenix is, Scottsdale.
Sheriff Joe.
In Arizona. And interviewed people on the streets about, do you want Trump to run or sit this one out?
I don't want him to. I like what he stands for. I like what he does. But he upset too many people, and he upset them really bad. So I don't think he's good for the party.
He needs to get back in. He already had gained that respect from all the world leaders and finish what he, you know, started.
It's too bad that he did what he did do and was fought the whole way along on darn near everything that he did, but that's what happened. So I'd like to see him not run.
If he did, I would vote for him, but I would not recommend he runs. I voted for Trump both times, and I love him. I think he was a good candidate, but I think his time has passed.
I couldn't care less about President Trump personally. I prefer somebody different, but if he is the nominee, I'll probably vote for him.
You know what? I voted for him for my very first time. I voted for him. I don't think it'll be best for our country for him to run for re-election. You know, I'm thankful for everything that he's done, but I think that our Republican Party needs to be united.
At this point, he's a little too polarizing, and I think that there are candidates out there, Republican candidates, obviously, that maybe be able to pull in people that he would lose to be able to change this.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I've got some reservations. I mean, I'm very appreciative of his Supreme Court nominations. I'm supportive and appreciative about his America First policy. And inflation was at an all-time low when he was in office. And unemployment numbers were at an all-time low.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if it's right for the party, because I am a DeSantis person. I've been watching, and we've all been watching over the past, you know, 3 years of how he's handled the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And it's just been a free state. And he just seems, he's level-headed. He's served our country. And he's young. I mean, I got the honor. I got to go to Mar-a-Lago to watch 2,000 Mules. And I realized, wait, Trump's old.
Like, yeah.
He's old. Biden's old. I mean, Trump's he's a lot more with it than, of course, Biden is.
Biden,
but I just think it's time to move on. I think he'd be better served if he supported up and coming Republicans.
See,
like DeSantis.
Guess what? Trump DeSantis is the dream ticket. 12 years, 12 great years of good leadership, respectability. I'm Team Trump.
Okay, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Convince me. Let's go to Candace in Mount Pleasant. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning.
Good morning, Candace.
Hello. Hi. Okay, I really hate the way that Trump handled COVID, and I don't think he should ever tweet again, personally. But I'm all for him because I like a baller. And I want to, you know.
He tweeted his way out of office, I swear to God.
But yeah, the COVID thing, and then, you know, ending up with communism was quite upsetting. But yeah, I want a baller, because now we need a baller. They have shown themselves, they've shown their, you know what, and now we need a baller to take care of them. And really to take down the whole federal thing, education. Did you see Betsy DeVos said that education, federal education has to go?
Yeah.
Well, she didn't say that 5 years ago, but isn't that, I mean, that's what I want.
Everybody
that's what
was
I
a...
want. Don't give me this, I want free choice. No, we're beyond that. It's dead. It's got to go.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Candace, for your phone call. Appreciate it. Let's go to... Oh, yeah. What did you want to say?
But, you know, I'm glad that he's polarizing. You want somebody like that. You want somebody that shows you who the bad people are. And that's what Trump was able to do. He was able to expose these people. So I'm telling you, we need Trump back in office because of what he was able to do in just 4 short years.
Well, what is he going to get the black vote?
I mean, I'm telling you, listen, I've been talking to a lot of black Democrats. They said if he runs, they're voting for him because they realize actually what he was trying to do for the black community. What is Joe Biden? What is J.B. Pritzker? What have these people done? Nothing.
Oh, they just sit there and lie and say, crime is down. If I hear Mayor Lightfoot say that one more time, I'm going to tear out my spleen with a rusty spoon.
How they're reporting crime is down.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about how they're reporting it.
And the clearance rate is up. No, because when the crime is not solved over a certain amount of time, they just take it off the books. Now I sound like I'm talking like I'm a Chicagoan. All right, let's go to Rich in Indian Head Park. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Amy. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
I would definitely vote for President Trump again, as long as it's after the midterms. And the reason why I would vote for him is because everything that's going on in the world today could have been avoided if he was president. We would have never had Ukraine. We'd have been energy independent. The inflation rate would be down. So all those people that were on the fence that voted for him and didn't like his tweets are finally realizing that they should have voted for him the way the country's going today. Thank you, guys, and have a good day.
Yeah.
All right. You too, Rich. But listen, and then, you know, he gave a speech yesterday, and if you watched any of his rallies, it's the same thing. You know, talked about how life was better, crime was, you know, low when he was in office. But then he comes out and says something like this.
Perhaps some people will not like hearing this, but the only way you're going to remove the hundreds of thousands of people and maybe throughout our nation, millions of people we're talking about and help make our cities clean, safe and beautiful again is open up large parcels of inexpensive land in the outer reaches of the cities, bring medical professionals, including doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, drug rehab specialists, build permanent bathrooms and other facilities, make them good, make them hard, but build them fast, and create thousands and thousands of high-quality tents, which can be done in one day.
This is to take care of the homeless problem.
You have to move people out. Now, some people say, oh, that's so horrible. No, what's horrible is what's happening now. Because now they're in tents, but most of them aren't even tents that function.
Oh.
That's how he would deal with the homeless situation.
Yeah.
Especially in Los Angeles and in California and in San Francisco, where in LA there have been two, you know, one the NASCAR driver was killed pumping gas.
Yeah.
This crazy homeless man just came up and stabbed him in broad daylight. And another, the Olympic volleyball player, she was hit over the head and beaten with a metal pipe.
Yeah.
By a crazy homeless person. Yeah. So I know that's just it was very provocative of him yesterday.
A lot of it has to deal with the mental health.
Yes.
States and cities have just, you know, not done enough for that.
But the real issue, you think they're going to drag people away
and put them
in camps?
No.
Please stop it. Larry and Bartlett, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Amy. Good morning, John.
Morning.
John, this isn't a complaint, but I have to be a little picky about your comment that world leaders didn't like Trump because he was crazy. I would say he was not crazy. They didn't like Trump because they knew what he said he was going to do, he would do.
Yeah.
If you look at what Obama did in the desert, he kept drawing red lines in the desert and back off and back off and back off. And then Trump told the Russians, you attack our base in Syria and I'll bomb the hell out of you.
Yeah.
And he killed 240 Russians. So that's why they were afraid of him. because he did what he promised to do.
Yeah. And when I say he's crazy, I mean, that's pretty much what I'm saying, that right. They knew that if Trump, they couldn't predict his movements and what he would do. And so that made them fear him.
Mike and Elgin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy and John.
Good morning.
Hey, I understand you played volleyball at Hersey. Did you play for RIM?
No, RIM came right after. But I was familiar with RIM. Yeah, because she played it. She coached at MacArthur when I was at River Trails. Right. If we want to go deep into the woods.
Oh, yeah.
But I love
her.
She's an amazing coach, and she did
a
wonderful
she is.
Job.
Yeah, I helped her out a few years when she actually went downstate in, was it 84 or 5 with Amy Pystrup or whatever from, yeah. But anyways.
That was 88. Okay.
Yeah, was that 88? Yeah. But the reason I called Amy is I wanted to convince you that Trump would be in his last term and he can clean it all out, clean the swamp out. Fire everybody, you know, fire this stinking FBI director and, you know, the head of, what's his name, from the DOJ. I mean, he could clean it all out and not worry about having to get reelected. And then we'd have, you know, 8 years with DeSantis. So, you know, I think that's the best of all worlds, you know, for him to do his last term and clean it out.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
I'm with him. I'm with
you. No, you didn't. But, I mean, if he's the nominee, of course I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the people that don't like him are not going to like him. You know, it's just they're
right. You're never going to change their minds. Yeah.
So what? You know, if they don't like him, so what? He's a hardball. DeSantis, we don't know what type of negotiator he is, though. You know what I mean? Because Trump, you know, the art of negotiation, he, you know, writes the book, knows how to negotiate, and knows how to get one up on everybody when he negotiates.
Amy, I think that's a great and valid point because DeSantis has the House and the Senate. He's never really had to negotiate like a Trump has, you know, because DeSantis can say, this is what I want, and he'll get it. Trump has to go in there, even with a hostile media, hostile House and Senate, he was still able to get stuff done.
All right, let's go to Dennis in Edgewater. Good morning, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy and John.
Hey,
Amy,
morning.
I heard what you said, what you had to say about Trump's idea about homelessness. And typical Trump, you know, he has a great idea, but maybe he hasn't flushed all of it out. I do want to say, though, I think he's not wrong. And I'll tell you why. I volunteer twice a week at a soup kitchen in the uptown area. I have a son who's got mental health issues and is living in a care facility in the same vicinity. And I've seen the homelessness. I've actually helped a young man who's living under a tent mm-hmm. under one of the bridges there in the uptown area. And he's not wrong. We need an aggressive action plan to get these people off the streets, to get them the care they need, to get them the support they need, and to just tolerate what's going on and say, well, we can't do what he's suggesting because it's not pretty or not doesn't sound nice, doesn't look nice. I think that's just as bad as doing nothing, which is what we're doing now.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I know mean, he needs to flush it out more. He needs to be a little more specific and maybe, you know, get some more other people giving him some ideas to build on that. But we have to act. We can no longer do this because 75 years, when the hospitals were empty, 75% of the people in Illinois that were in those hospitals came to the uptown area.
Mm. That, oh, I know.
So
who was your Alderman Schiller? What was her name?
I don't know. I've lived in downtown Chicago now for 4 years, and so I'm living it. I see it, and I don't think he's wrong. I think we have to have more hard conversations like this.
All right, thanks, Dennis. Yeah, and then if you drive up Lakeshore Drive, and north of Irving, I mean, they're popping up tents everywhere. And,
but you know what, Amy, a large portion of the homeless community want to be out there.
I volunteered at Catholic Charities Tuesday Night Supper for a year. And I met all these same guys for a year, every night, you know, once a week.
Yeah.
I'd see them more than my mom, you know, because she lives out of state. And they had no desire. Like, why don't you?
Responsibility.
Think, no, we're giving you a voucher for 3 months free rent. Because, no, I don't. Yeah. They want their freedoms.
They don't want the responsibility of having to live life.
Nope. Because he's like, I'll get in there and then I'll never be able to leave. I'm like, they're not going to lock you in. So that's a whole other subject. Let's quickly go to Rick in Joliet. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Amy, I don't know where to start with you, so I'm just going to try to keep it.
Just be nice.
Oh, wow.
You got my blood pressure going a little bit this morning, and I do intend to be respectful here, but, you know, this common opinion of, you know, well, I like what he does, but I don't like him. This need, this cult of personality desire to find a pretty Navy SEAL like Ron DeSantis, who I would also support myself, by the way, is completely contrary to the point that you are hiring somebody to do a job. And if you cannot see the job that needs to be done, that's the absolute destruction that's been done in a year and a half, I don't know what to tell you. But what you're doing here that the great, late, great Rush Limbaugh, God rest his soul, warned us against is you are allowing the opposition party and the media to choose your candidate. And if you don't think that the same people who did what they did to Trump, including people in his own party, are going to turn around and do the exact same thing to Ron DeSantis, you are, A, living in a fantasy world on the political side, and, again, B, if you can't see that we need a guy like Trump with a broom that big and a foot that big, as somebody else noted, for the last 4 years, or just to have a one-four-year term, to do everything it takes, to what John said, clean up as much of this mess on both sides as necessary.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. You know what? Thanks, Rick, for the phone call. Appreciate your passion. You're listening to AM 560, The Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560, The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Will we get it? Good morning, Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony from Black and Right Radio, which is on Saturdays right here on AM 560 from 12 to 3 p.m. Or have they changed that time?
Still 12 to 3.
All right. Yeah. How are you liking those 3 hours?
Oh, I'm loving it.
I know. I'm hearing great things. Yeah. I catch myself when I'm in the car. I turn you on.
Oh,
and I'm
you.
A nerd, a radio nerd, and I call in and sometimes you guys don't take my call.
Well, blame the technical Loser. Producer.
I'll use a different name next time to see if I can.
Hey, that probably
through.
Works.
Yeah, but thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Once again, I just had flashbacks yesterday. I watched the press conference where the Democratic Select Committee person who is deciding between four cities for the DNC next summer. I had flashbacks to when we tried to get the Olympics. I had different flashbacks when we tried to get different things and our overlords just throwing themselves at this man, trying to convince him that Chicago is the place, you know, the safe place to have the DNC in the summer of 2024.
Chicago.
Some of you
place.
May recall the 1996 DNC was held here in Chicago with tremendous success. The convention sparked development around the United Center, leading to the restaurant shops and residences we see today in the West Loop and the Fulton Market District where we are in right now. The 2024 DNC convention has the same power to revitalize, and we are ready to harness that power.
Basically, we need the money. Mayor Lightfoot went on to say that it will bring in $150 to $200 million worth of revenue that week. But are you ready for this? Because this, I heard this and this made me laugh because I knew you and I were going to be working together.
Uh-huh.
Here's Congressman Danny Davis.
Uh-oh.
About why Illinois and Chicago should get the DNC convention over the other three cities, which, by the way, are New York, Atlanta, or Houston. Are you ready for this, John Anthony? This is for you.
Ready.
Our state has managed the coronavirus as well and better than practically any state in the nation. Our mayor has stood tall time and time again, promoting policies that say that America is the place where everybody can feel that they are in.
What? Do you agree with that?
Tell that to the people who lost everything. Tell that to the losers that they picked out, that they chose. These people will not. I mean, guess what? We're still the only state in the Midwest that's under a disaster declaration.
For 31 months straight.
Yeah.
And so he's COVID. I mean, Pritzker's saying we solved COVID. You know, I did a great job at COVID. Why, if you did such a good job, why are we still under an emergency order?
Yeah.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, and then a quick comment. Should we have the Democratic National Convention here? here's the guy they're wooing, who they're throwing themselves at. His name is Mr. Harrison.
Jamie.
Jamie Harrison, yes. Do you know him?
I know of him, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is why we need to have a full-blown show.
Yeah, President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, they didn't get a chance to have a regular convention. They didn't get a chance to have an inauguration. So this will be the first time in 4 years in which America will see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and all of the things that they have accomplished and achieved, and to hear their stories and why they deserve to go back to the White House for another 4 years. Why Democrats deserve to control the White House, the House, the Senate, governor's mansions, and state houses.
I mean, listen to these people.
Guess what? Do you remember the difference between the Republican convention and the Democrat convention?
We kind of had people.
We actually had a convention.
I mean, everything was drastically right. Scaled down, but we did have people gathering for, to vote.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't. I mean, they did. God, we think about Biden. I mean, he campaigned from his basement. He was not even out. And when he did come out, there'd be six or seven cars out in the parking lot. Then he had a mask on and he was talking to. I mean, it was just disgusting. But they did have. I mean, I have heard Kamala's story. You have heard Kamala Harris's story.
That she's a woman.
And that you hear, Biden, excuse me. They're trying to be one and the same. His story over and over again. You know, about corn pop and all that stuff. But, and here's real quick. This is a montage mashup of all the great comments Biden has made.
If I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
That's why I and so damn many other people I grew up have cancer.
What are you doing using your big school words? Just use normal people words and I'll understand what you're talking about.
And Corn Pop was a bad dude. And he ran a bunch of bad boys.
I'm eager to hear. Eager to hear next from my good friends.
Sublime command.
The idea that an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child decides, I decided I want to be transgender. That's what I think I'd like to be. It'll make my life a lot easier. There should be zero discrimination.
I mean, he's just a buffoon. This is making me actually want to run to Trump now.
Hey, but I mean, here's a question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jamie said all the things that, the Democrats have accomplished. What is it? Name one thing that they've accomplished. Name one.
They can't.
The destruction of America? Okay. Yeah. That is their goal. That is the progressives' goal.
They fundamentally
transform America. They're doing it.
Fresh from his COVID home stint, J.B. Pritzker, are you ready for this? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they are Chicago.
Our great president and vice president, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they represent the two of them, the diversity among them of the city of Chicago, just between the two of them. And what we have to show off is the neighborhoods and people of the city of Chicago to represent what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris represent.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-3600. type in DA, then a quick comment. Why wouldn't they choose somewhere where they're not Democrats, where they try to attract Democrats to their party?
Right. Well, Chicago is the base, so, you know, the base of all cheating.
Well, that question was asked to Mr. Harrison.
You know, I don't buy, I know many of the pundits often talk about, you know, the impact politically that it has on things. You know, we held a convention in Philadelphia and we didn't win Pennsylvania that year. We held a convention in Charlotte and we didn't win North Carolina that year, right? So bottom line is about the show. It's about putting on the best show possible on the ground, but also on television.
Show.
Painting the picture and demonstrating why, and it's about the story and why Democrats need to be in leadership.
A show. Pageantry.
Yeah.
You know?
We're the sash. This is why we're in it. For, you know, this is Hollywood. We need a big production. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to, Bob in Buffalo Grove. Good morning, Bob.
What up, Bobby?
Yeah, good morning, Amy and John. Good to hear you, John. I'm going to date myself. You guys weren't born, but let's have a redo of 1968 without all the assassinations. I remember that convention, and I had a college roommate that was involved in the protests. All we need to do is have Biden give a resignation or step down like Johnson did on March 31st, 68. I remember that speech, too. And open it up, and let's see the crazies come out. And back then, in 68, I was listening to WIND and listening to Howard Miller, and he was talking about what was going to happen at the convention and all the crazies that came into the town, the hippies, the yippies. Mm-hmm. And they were going to nominate a pig, and it was something to live through, that convention, and I'm all for bringing it here and let's see what happens.
Wow, do you think it'd be crazier than 68, Bob?
Well, it's going to be interesting. How kicker is going to be? How will Mayor Lightfoot, if she's still mayor? That's the other big issue. How will she handle it? Because remember what Daley, you weren't alive. What did Daley do? He brought out the police. And
you bring out the National Guard, too, and say, you know, not.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know.
No. What did he say? Was that the same? I'm trying to think. That was the famous speech where he said the police are here not to create disorder, but to preserve disorder.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Good job.
I don't think it's going to happen, though. I mean, the Democrats control all of the, you know, the instigators. So they won't unleash their instigators on their own convention.
Well, Mayor Lightfoot was asked, you know, will our police department be ready?
I think we're all up for it. You know, I said earlier that we're ready for our close up. This is a great global city. We are ready to show all the proof points that support Biden and Harris, whether it's our work with organized labor, whether it's how we're using ARP dollars to strengthen communities. The list goes on and on. And this is a place where we are going to be not only uniting Chicago and Illinois, but we have the opportunity to really ignite the entire Midwest, from Minneapolis to Detroit, from Madison to Milwaukee, down to St. Louis, and parts in between. This is a real opportunity to go right at the heartland. And, you know, my view is you win the heartland, you win the election. And we are ready.
I thought that there was talk, too, of Biden stepping down.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris having a different running mate.
Like somebody here?
What?
somebody that resides here in Illinois?
Yeah.
Hey, you think they gave each other COVID?
Oh, but Biden and
Pritzker? Yeah, he was up there, right?
Oh, yeah, he was there. Who knows? He could have gotten in Saudi Arabia. Somebody could have walked by him and gone, and trying to off him.
Did you hear the comedian joke?
No.
Basically said, if COVID is done, if it doesn't take out somebody like a Biden, or he said, if it Colton's potency is completely done. You got to listen to this comedian. I think it was, I'll find it for you and I'll send it to you. But he said, COVID has lost all viability.
Oh, good. Yeah. Are you glad you didn't get vaccinated?
Of course. Still not.
I'll play something for you later about the vaccine, unvaccinated. But this is now, this is because you used to be a state rep.
Yeah.
All right. So who's in charge of the DNC right now?
Jamie Harrison and up there, but right, here but in Illinois, it's Robin Kelly.
Okay. So Pritzker, not a big fan of Robin Kelly, never wanted her to be in charge.
Yeah.
So Marian Ahern, who is the stones of a girl. I mean, she's got stones. I love this woman. Listen to what. Listen, because each reporter got one question, just one. Yeah. And here's her question.
Governor, can I ask you, because the mayor did talk about the unified leadership, and while Shia did refer to it, we'd like to get your comments. How can you say there's unified leadership when you're trying to boot Robin Kelly from her post?
Well, let's be clear. We're all standing here in unison, standing up for a Democratic convention for Chicago and for the state of Illinois. And I think as the chair said so eloquently, after Saturday, we're going to have a chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois. Whoever that is going to serve a four-year term. We're all rallying around the Democratic Party of Illinois.
But come on.
Ouch.
I mean, she was standing right behind him, too, and it was very uncomfortable.
Ouch.
I love when things get uncomfortable. You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer, Amy Jacobson and John Anthony, who's in for Dan Proft.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Dennis Prager at Cigar Night on Thursday, August 18th at the Humidor Cigar Lounge in Lyle. Tickets on sale now at 560theanswer.com/cigar.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome back to Chicago's Morning Answer. Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony in for Dan Proft today. So thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. The war in Ukraine continues. It started February 24th. Remember at that time, everyone in Chicago put up their Ukrainian flags, the bumper stickers. I saw stickers on porta potties. I saw, you know, overpasses that were filled with, you know, save Ukrainians. And then as time went on, you know, and then June came and those flags were replaced with the gay pride flag. And then 4th of July came and those flags were replaced with the American flag.
Some places.
In some places, yeah. Well, okay. But I just don't know, you know, the public interest is waning as this war drags on. So with more on this and an expert on Putin, let's welcome to the program Philip Short, longtime foreign correspondent for the BBC, economist, London Times, and author of said book, Putin, the most comprehensive and detailed biography of the Russian leader to date. Good morning, Mr. Short. How are you?
Good morning, Amy.
Yes. So tell us... how long do you think that this is going to last, this invasion of Ukraine, and what is Putin's endgame?
It's going to last quite a while. I mean, that sounds a very trite thing to say, but it's absolutely unknowable. Putin's hope is that the longer it goes on, the more the West, you talked to just now about interest beginning to wane and the Ukrainian flags being replaced in places by other flags. That's what he's reckoning on, that eventually with inflation rising, energy costs high, gasoline prices going through the roof, possibly in Europe, in the developing world, there will be famine, there will be hunger, waves of migration. All these things are going to put a lot of pressure, Putin hopes, on Western Europe and on the United States, on the West generally. And our resolution will waver. Now, whether that happens or not is going to depend on what happens in the battlefield as well. And that is unknowable. The Ukrainians and the West say, we're going to win. The Russians say, we're going to win. We're just going to have to watch how it plays out. But I think we're talking about months and possibly a lot longer.
Well, for those of us who, you know, don't refresh our memory, why does he want to capture Ukraine in the first place?
Ukraine has been a fixation for Putin for years and years, ever since the 1990s. And it all started with Ukraine was the country which voted for independence and back in 1991. And that vote really was the final nail in the coffin of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union then broke up. And Putin has never forgotten that. Ukraine is the biggest country alongside Russia. It's very close in culture. It's a distinctive Slav nation. It's not Russian, but it's very close in culture to the Russians. And for Putin, it's really important that Ukraine be at least neutral. So that's one issue. But the other issue, which is actually even more important, is the relationship between Russia and the United States. Putin wants to neutralize Ukraine, but above all, he wants to show that the United States can't prevent Russia from doing that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people forget that Putin poisoned the former Ukrainian president, Yushchenko, or however you pronounce his name. You know, I look at...
Yes.
I've been following this for quite some time since Russia and Putin and Ukraine. Now, you look at how Russia invaded Ukraine. Do you believe this happens under a Trump administration? And if, let's say, Trump comes back to run again, you think the war ends quicker?
Well, this is kind of what if, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very speculative. I'm going to pick you up on one thing. You say Putin poisoned Yushchenko, the former Ukrainian president. The SBU, the Ukrainian Secret Service, did it.
Okay.
They probably had some help from the Russians, but it was not Putin himself who kind of ordered the poisoning of Yushchenko. But to come back to Trump... it's very, very difficult to know. My feeling is that had Trump still been in power, we would not be where we are now. Not so much because Trump would have been kind of an easy pushover, but Trump was extremely unpredictable. And with Biden, Putin thought he was dealing with a much more predictable administration, an administration which had just pulled the last soldiers out of Afghanistan in rather chaotic order, and which he thought was not going to react very strongly to Russia going into Ukraine. Trump, he couldn't have been sure how Trump would have reacted. So, yeah, it might have been different if Trump had still been in power. If Trump is reelected, my goodness, well, everything's going to change, isn't it?
But would it change for the better?
That depends on your politics in America.
Yes.
I'm not American. It's for you guys to judge whether it would be better or worse if Trump came back to power. I think a lot of Americans would probably quarrel about one way or the other about that. Your country is not really very, very in great agreement about Trump and about politics generally.
Right. But do you think Putin would, you know, if Trump was back in office, Putin would back down by any means?
No, I don't think there's any question that Putin will back down. And this is wishful thinking. He has gone so far that he cannot afford to lose. So he's going to carry on. The question earlier was, how long is this going to last? He's going to carry on until he has something which he can present as a victory. And you may say, well, what happens if the Ukrainians win? Yeah, if Ukraine does manage to push Russia, the Russian forces, right back to the positions of before February 24, then we're into a whole different ballgame. But logically, I mean, looking at the military situation, it's rather hard at this stage to see that happening. Much more likely, a war of attrition, which eventually finishes up largely frozen, with neither side able to get a decisive advantage.
Is there anything to the rumors that Putin has cancer?
No, I think Bill Burns had it absolutely right when he said he's altogether too healthy. I mean, I've been watching Putin extremely carefully for the last 10 years, and he doesn't, I mean, he's older now, he's put on weight, he doesn't work out as much as he used to. You know, he's nearly 70. But
wow.
There's absolutely no sign that his health has fundamentally changed or that he's following a very different schedule from what he did 10 years ago. If you're sick, you don't have loads of meetings, public meetings, meetings with ministers, you know, every day. And that's what Putin is doing.
So what you're saying is there'll be no more shirtless riding on horses from Putin anytime soon.
No, he's got a bit old for that. He doesn't do the black slopes anymore, yeah, skiing either. He's changing, and his image is changing. A terrible image in the West, but even in Russia, where he still has a lot of support, his image is kind of becoming more the father, grandfatherly figure of the head of state,
yeah,
rather than this macho image that he used to project.
Now, what do you think is motivating Putin? You think it was the fall and the collapse of the Soviet Union that's motivating him to return to what he thinks is preeminence of Russia, of the USSR? What's his goal? What's the end game here?
I think if you want one key word, it's respect. It's not to reconstruct the Soviet Union. I mean, he'd love to do that, but he knows it's impossible. It's not to reestablish the Russian Empire, but it is. It's a little bit like Trump, you know, make America great again. It's not making Russia great again for Putin, but it's giving Russia back its pride and showing the rest of the world that Russia is a country that is to be respected. That is his fundamental motivation.
All right, Philip Short, thank you so much for joining us. Longtime foreign correspondent for the BBC, economist, London Times, and author of Putin, the most comprehensive and detailed biography of the Russian leader to date. Thank you so much, Mr. Short. Have a wonderful day.
Gotta go get it.
Thank you, Amy. You too. Bye.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
All right, John Anthony. A year ago, our leaders all said the COVID shot would keep us from getting and spreading COVID. Remember that?
I do.
And then guess what happened?
They got COVID. Spread it, too.
You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID.
And when people are vaccinated, they can feel safe that they are not going to get infected.
Dr. Fauci says he has COVID again.
If you've done the right thing and gotten vaccinated, you deserve the freedom to be safe from COVID-19.
And this morning, I learned I tested positive for COVID-19 as well.
With three doses that you've been prevented, not just from serious illness, but from getting this virus, this Omicron variant, and therefore giving it to others.
Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews is in quarantine for 7 days after testing positive to COVID.
So I'm fully vaccinated. It gives me some comfort.
Anthony Albanese has just tested positive for coronavirus.
Having received two doses of AstraZeneca, it's a very effective vaccine, protection from symptomatic illness and therefore risk of transmission to others.
Risk of transmission to others.
That music was amazing.
How are you feeling now, John Anthony?
I'm doing great, unvaccinated, and still living life.
I mean, what hypocrites.
Yeah.
Those world leaders were. It was the pandemic of the unvaccinated. They shamed you. They made you feel you couldn't go into a restaurant.
Yeah.
You couldn't work out at a gym because you didn't have your card. Your life was put on hold for what? How long did that last? 3 months?
Yeah, it did.
That stupidity in New York had lasted almost a year.
Yeah.
So shame on that. But Justin Kosick said he wanted to ask me a question about the vaccine. So
well, mine plays basically off of John Anthony right there. Is which group has more regrets right now, the vaccinated or the unvaccinated?
the vaccinated, I'm sure.
No, absolutely.
Did you hear about the ladies' men? The cycle and how it's off.
It's thousands called the menstrual cycle.
Well, I was trying to be respectful. Didn't know what I could or couldn't say. That's why I said
the
cycle.
Doctor term. It's the medical term, I should say. Yes, no, because I was a victim of that.
Yeah.
I went through menopause years ago, and after my first COVID vaccine, full blown period. And I told Alex Berenson about that because he reached out on Twitter and was reaching out to different women, and he asked me about it, and I DM'd him back and told him what happened. Then I called my gynecologist, and he said, "Yep, that's happening a lot." I said, "Well, then why are you supporting this and why are you promoting it?"
Ooh.
Because why would that there's nothing in the world that would make that happen unless you got something into your, administered into your body that made that happen. So do you feel uncomfortable now, John, talking about this?
No, I'm okay.
Are you squirming a little bit?
A little bit, but that's okay. Yeah, okay.
But you know, people. And, but I will tell you this: the people that have not gotten vaccinated are the only ones that I know that do not have COVID right now.
Yeah, you know why? Because natural immunity works. It really works. Deborah Burke said it. You know, she's, you know, and she also said that, you know, we probably did push the vaccines a little bit too much.
That's true.
Okay. Now you tell us.
To do that.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning. Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony in for Dan Proft today, host of Black and Right Radio, which could be heard Saturdays right here on AM 560 from noon to 3 o'clock. So you want to check that out.
Yes.
And something that I checked out the other day that has really has stayed with me, and I just wanted to share it because there's such a lack of respect for police officers, for military men and women who've served this country so proudly. It's a story about Keith Cooper, a 73-year-old Vietnam veteran. He was killed during a carjacking last summer. And his daughter wrote a note to his attackers, whom, by the way, one was a minor. They were both on electronic monitoring. So they're suing Cook County and said judges for letting them out on electronic monitoring. And they committed this heinous crime while on EM. So his daughter wrote this letter. On Wednesday, July 14th, you turned my world upside down. My dad was just on his way to pick up his prescription at CVS when you spotted him. He just wanted to get his medicine, get back in his car, and come pick me up. We had stuff to do that day. But one of you decided to grab his keys from his hand and demand his car. That's fine. You can have his car. He had insurance. We could have gotten him a new car. He asked you nicely to give him his keys back. The onlookers even asked you to give my dad his keys back. My dad didn't try to fight you or give you a hard time. Why didn't you just give him the keys back? Here's where everything got messed up. You couldn't get into the car. You dum-dums couldn't figure out how to use the key fob. You couldn't figure out how to just click the damn button. So out of frustration, you punched my dad in the head and pushed him in his chest. His heart is very fragile. He's had two heart surgeries in the past 10 years. And after all that, you ran. You ran. You blank and ran because you both are cowards. All my daddy wanted to do was pick up his damn medication, but you couldn't let him do that. And you were too stupid to figure out how to use a key fob. I'm going to pray for you. God can get you better than I can. Sincerely, Keith's baby girl. I mean, isn't that, that's just, but she's, I mean, I didn't know that that's why they punched him. Cause I remember hearing about the story.
Yeah.
But I didn't know because they couldn't figure out how to use the key fob.
Not too
and
bright.
And so they punched him and killed him.
Not too bright.
So this world is going to hell in a handbag sometimes, but we have to keep the hope, right? God is good. You always tell me that.
Yep,
we text each
good.
Other that, you and
yeah,
I, back
God
and forth
good.
When we're having those days.
God is good. That's, I mean, that's all I got. You right. know, he's good and he's greater than anything, you know? That's how I feel it.
So our next guest is, she's had to deal with murder as well. Ann Dorn, her husband, retired police captain David Dorn, was killed by looters in St. Louis during the George Floyd riots. And the good news is that somebody has been captured and has been convicted in this case.
Yes, they have.
And with that, we welcome her to the program. Good morning, Ann. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
Good morning.
So, Ann.
Good morning, John.
Yeah, I know that you were on John's shows last Saturday, which and I appreciate him helping us out today, but we wanted to hear your story and just start by telling us about your husband.
David was a great man. He was, in his mind, he was a superhero all his life. As a kid, he used to play Superman and superhero, and all he ever wanted to be was a superhero, and became a police officer. And you know, he loved doing his job. He loved taking care of people. And, you know, his career shows it. His career shows his soar up to being a captain. He succeeded in everything he did, and he enjoyed doing it, and he excelled. And not only did he take care of his people, but he took care of his community as well. And everybody loved him.
Yeah, and you know what? And I know you still haven't watched the video of that tragic day. And no. I don't blame you. I watched it, and when I first saw it, I literally cried when I first saw it. Now, this person who I will not say his name. This person has been convicted. When is the when will he be sentenced?
He'll be sentenced September 13th at 10 a.m.
Yeah. Are they looking? Missouri still has the death penalty, correct?
They do still have the death penalty. They're not seeking it. However, minimum sentence, I believe, is life in prison without parole just for the murder first charge. He has 7 other pending charges.
Good Lord.
Does he have a record, this 26-year-old?
Yes. He was charged with a robbery first, which is an armed robbery. Back in 2013, he was put on probation. In 2018, he violated the probation and committed a second armed robbery. And then in 2020, he committed a felony stealing while on probation again. So they never gave him jail time. He just kept getting probation on top of probation on top of probation.
Wow. And you've started the Captain David Dorn Foundation. Talk to us a little bit about that. What the foundation has done and continues to do for police that are serving now.
Well, the foundation is to carry on his name and his legacy of helping others, and we've decided to start this foundation to help all first responders, police and fire and EMS, by buying them equipment that they would normally have to pay out of pocket for. That their uniform allowance or the department doesn't supply for them. So flashlights, gear bags, medic, trauma kits, eye and ear protection. We bought boots for firemen. The fire departments usually supply boots for them, but every 2 to 3 years is a cycle. And if they get destroyed in the meantime, they kind of just have to tape them up and deal with it. Now imagine, you know, Chicago and St. Louis in February fighting a fire standing in water. Ugh. You know, and the temperature's 9 degrees outside and you got holes in your boots.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys are in need. And if we can help them just a little bit and save them some money, that's what we're going to do. Wow. And on top of that, we have mental health providers that we know that we are connected with. We can get them help for mental health services for them and their families. And I even want to supply some service dogs for a few of them if possible.
Well, good for you. God bless you for doing that. And again, where can people help? What website can we go to?
The website is www.capt, which is short for Captain David Dorn Foundation.com. Or they can find it on the Facebook page of the Captain David Dorn Foundation.
And also, you failed to mention that you're also on the radio, Hitting Heroes with Ann Dorn as well. You know I'm not going to let you get away without that.
Yeah, I am on Hidden Heroes. I focus on the families and the people who stand behind first responders. I humanize our first responders and let people know, hey, they're fathers, their mothers, their brothers, sisters.
Yeah.
And, you know, make it real for people.
Well, let's go back to that night of June 2nd, 2020 at Lee's Pawn and Jewelry. Mm-hmm. Your husband had an accomplished career, retired as a captain, but he didn't want it because, you know, some people miss the clown in the circus. And some people just miss the clowns or the circus, and some people miss both when they retire. So he wanted to get back in the game, right?
Well, he'd always helped Lee. Lee was a friend of his. They'd been friends for 40-plus years. We lived about 5 minutes from Lee's business. Lee lived – when he lived in town, he was a snowbird. When he lived in town, he was probably 45 minutes away. Mm-hmm. So anytime something would happen, Dave had keys, and if an alarm went off, Dave would respond. And it usually was a rodent, a rat had gotten in the building, or a thunderstorm would set it off. This night, we knew differently because of the riots happening in the city of St. Louis, but I had gone to bed, and because I had to be up early in the morning. We were working 12-hour shifts, and apparently he got a call around 2 a.m. that the building had been breached, and he responded, and thinking the police would be there because when the building's breached, the police respond. But obviously, the police weren't there when he got there, and he confronted the looters. From what I found out in court, he did fire off 2 warning shots because it was so chaotic into the air, and he confronted a couple of them, talking to them, telling them not to leave the place, telling them they're just going to get some silver chains and some used TVs. And this young man came out of wherever he came from with a gun, walked past him probably 20, 30 feet, turned around, kneeled, and fired at him 10 times, striking him 4 times.
Oh, he's fired 10 rounds? Why? I mean, why? Did he apologize in court? Or did he?
No, he was very cold and callous in court. He showed actually no emotions whatsoever in court. Just cold, dead eyes staring straight ahead, never looking at anybody, never acknowledging anybody in court.
Did they put up what kind of defense? What did they say he was shooting himself? I mean, what in the world did his defense attorney say?
No, they said he wasn't there. They said
Their defense?
Yeah, there's no DNA or fingerprints to put him on scene. And since there's no DNA or fingerprints, then he couldn't have been there. You know, they're playing the CSI effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had a DNA specialist say, just because I'm standing in a room doesn't mean I'm going to leave DNA behind.
Yeah.
And, you know, you show him in a picture on Facebook. He was in a black outfit 5 days before holding 2 guns. And then the was night of the looting, he was nude.
Was one of the guns in the photo?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
they believe so. And then, and then 5 days later, he's caught on camera inside the pawn shop wearing the exact same outfit with one of the guns.
Wow. And you know, I know that right after this happened, President Trump brought you guys in. You spoke at the Republican National Convention. How was that? What was that experience like? And you know, a lot of people talk, you know, negative about Trump, but how was Trump? Was he to you and your family?
He was awesome. He was such a gentleman. He was so kind and compassionate. Somebody wrote up a dossier, or he looked into Dave, but he knew everything about Dave's career, and he read it. He knew Dave's career. He got to know who David was, you know, and then he and I talked for 20, 30 minutes. He called first. Well, he had someone call first to see if I would even talk to him, which he talked to him. And my sister's like, of course you will. And so when he and I talked, it was a very long conversation. And what he didn't know, he wanted to know. He asked a lot of questions, and he was just so kind and caring, and asked, you know, if the kids are in, and I needed anything. And then he invited us to the White House, and it was kind of funny how he invited us to the White House. It was about a month, not even a month after Dave died. He called, and I'm home alone, and I'm eating dinner, and I get a phone call, and it's just like, hey, Anna, it's Donald. Like, we're old buddies and friends. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, Melania and I are having a garden party. You want to come?
Oh, that's so sweet. Now,
We were celebrating the 4th of July with hundreds of other people. It's like, hey, we're just having a little get together at the house. You want to come over for a barbecue? Is what it sounded like.
Oh, that's great. So you went, right? And was it a?
Of course,
affair?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We went to the barbecue first before the RNC because the RNC was in August, and we went to this in July.
I didn't know that.
So we went to the barbecue first.
I didn't know that.
This 4th of July. Yeah, the 4th of July, we were there with several hundred people. And we got to sit on the lawn of the White House and watch the 4th of July fireworks.
That's great.
And
did anybody reach out to you from the Democratic side?
No. Wow. One. Wow. Not one person.
Never. Offer any condolences or anything?
No, not even his friends. Not even the people he considered friends called.
Wow. And you have a fundraiser coming up, right? For the Captain David Doan Foundation, right?
I do. I have a dine and donate coming up at the Texas Roadhouse on August 18th here in Arnold, Missouri. And we're trying to get the other ones involved in the area because I think we have like 4 Texas Roadhouses here in the St. Louis area. So we're trying to get all 4 of them involved. So right now we have 1 and we're working on the other 3 to get them involved for a dine and donate on August 18th.
So, Ann, since this shooting happened, and your husband was quickly and violently taken away, what are you doing to help yourself heal?
A lot of friends and family. I'm giving back to the communities. I still teach law enforcement. I still teach a lot of law enforcement officers, so I surround myself with them. And I've built a wellness program right now that I'm working on with the state of Florida. And I'm going to be continue to help other first responders. And that, I think, helping gets me through.
One Democrat. Wow.
No. All right. Ann Doran, thank you so much for joining us. And again, if you want to help out, it's CaptainDavidDornFoundation.com, correct?
Yes, but Captain is abbreviated. C-A-P-T.
C-A-P-T. CaptainDavidDornFoundation.com. Ann, thank you so much for joining us and spending time with us this
morning.
Thank
you, Ann.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for our weekly confab with Stephen Moore, noted economist. Hello, Mr. Moore. How are you?
Hi, Amy. Good morning. I will not say the word. I will not say the R word today. I will not say the recession word.
Yeah, you just did. Oh, because
we're not
allowed
to say that, right?
Right. And John Anthony, by the way, is in for Dan Prof today, just so you know.
Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going, buddy? Good to see you. Good to hear from you again.
Well, when asked about the R word, President Biden said this yesterday with Peter Ducey.
President, we're getting GDP numbers on Thursday. How worried should Americans be that we could be in a recession?
We're not going to be in a recession, in my view. The employment rate is still one of the lowest we've had in history. It's in the 3.6 area. We still find ourselves with people investing. My hope is we go from this rapid growth to steady growth. And we'll see some coming down. But I don't think we're going to, God willing, I don't think we're going to see a recession.
Is hope a strategy right now, Stephen Moore?
Well, first of all, it's really kind of interesting because on Sunday, the White House minions went on all the talk shows and said, oh, recession. No, we're not in a recession. No, we're not in a recession. Recession isn't two straight quarters of GDP growth. Well, you know, just look it up in the dictionary. I mean, the dictionary definition of recession for the last 50 years has been, you know, two straight quarters of a negative economic growth. Now, we get the number officially 8:30 tomorrow morning, okay. Eastern time, so 7:30 your time. And so we'll have the official readout. I think it's likely that it's going to be negative, although it could be slightly positive. But most of the forecasts are it's going to be between -1% and -2%. And that means after the first quarter, which was negative, if my math is right, that's two straight quarters of negative growth. But what's so interesting is how they're trying to change the definition of things. You know, this is what the left does, effectively now. So remember the term a transitory, you know, that they redefined the word transitory. Then remember, oh, here's one, mostly peaceful.
Right.
As in mostly peaceful. Right?
As the building behind him is burning. One. Yeah.
Right. Here's another one. I don't know. Do you know what the definition of Amy, of a woman is? Because I think people are confused about what a woman is these days. I mean, it could go on and on and on. But look, it doesn't matter what the kind of textbook definition of a recession is. When you got 80% of Americans who say the economy's headed in the wrong direction, which are worse than even Jimmy Carter numbers, and when you have 9 to 10% inflation, people are really having to cut back even on their essentials, food and energy. That's a recession for people.
Right. People have to make choices. And you know how I compare everything to that big box of goldfish? So remember when we first started doing this? A big box of goldfish, because that's a staple for any mom with kids. All the kids, they have goldfish. And if you own a minivan, you'll find them in your car even 10 years later. But when we started this, $3.98, guess how much it was last week at the Jewels?
$3.98.
Wow. $11.12. I took a picture of it. I was in shock. I'm like, how did that go from $3.98? Now at Walmart, somebody texted me a picture because I tweet this out. They're for $8.99, and that's on sale. But they're 11
doubled at Walmart.
Yeah, but I mean that's some scary stuff because that's what moms use to feed their kids. You know, snacks are so important, and we found out from our good friends over there at Bruce Hill is the author of this article that the average Illinoisan needed a pay raise of $5,920 to keep up with inflation during the past 12 months.
Wow.
Well, so that's exactly right. And so, and by the way, I don't think most people did get pay raises of $6,000 last year. So this is the biggest problem with inflation is that people's paychecks are not keeping pace with the increase in the cost of buying things. So what that really means is people are getting poorer. And I love the White House saying, oh, we've done so much. They're talking about this, quote, equitable recovery. That was the term that they used yesterday. Well, what's equitable about this? The people are getting crushed by the inflation, as you were just saying, Amy, are, you know, working class folks, people with lower incomes, who when they have to pay more money for milk and for gasoline and for broccoli and the things they have to buy, that is like a tax, and they're getting crushed by it. So it feels like the White House is living in, you know, Never Never Land, where they're not even in touch with the reality of what's going on in Main Street USA.
Yeah, and I had to pay $14 for a pound of ground beef the other day.
What?
$14 for a pound of ground beef. I mean, it's hitting
it Wagyu?
Everywhere. No. Those are the prices right now. You know, Stephen, I got a question for you. As you know, Illinois governor, he just re-signed another disaster declaration. Here's my question. Have the COVID funds run out yet? And is he signing this declaration because there's more money that can be sent to the state of Illinois?
Well, I don't know what your situation is in Illinois with respect to how much money is left from your COVID funds, but how in the world are they declaring an emergency on COVID? Come on.
I mean, Lollapalooza this week. Lollapalooza. People are coming from all over the world.
What's that?
I said we have Lollapalooza this week and people coming from all over the world and there's an emergency declaration.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, here's the point. That we just had a 77-year-old man who has asthma who got COVID. And all the White House said, oh, no, he's fine. Don't worry about it. Look, if somebody with two comorbidities, advanced age and asthma, isn't having a problem with this, this is just the common cold. You know, it's a summer cold. Now, that's not the case in every instance, but the idea that we're going to start shutting down things and declaring emergencies for this, I mean, it's like the left, they want to shut down things every chance that they get. Every time we get the flu virus, are we going to shut down our economy again?
I know. And in San Diego School District, 11 people are in the hospital out of 1.4 million people, and they're remasking kids in their summer school and the teachers, too,
you know,
for 11 hospitalizations.
Way, yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. Here's the thing. When you talk to people in the hospitals, they say that the reason the person is in the hospital is not because of COVID. I mean, in other words, let's say you break your arm and then they take your temperature and say you've got COVID. You're not in the hospital because you have COVID. You're in the hospital because you broke your arm.
Yeah.
But and they test everybody. Everybody who enters the hospital has to be tested. It doesn't matter what you're there for.
That's right. Exactly. So a lot of these, when you read these statistics that you were just citing, they're overestimating how many people are really having major health problems because of COVID. I mean, I just think people are tired of it. I think people want to get on with their lives. I think, you know, obviously people should be safe and, you know, you don't want to be, you want to wash your hands and be involved in good health habits. But
did you just tell me to wash my hands?
Yes, please wash your hands, Amy. I know that you know. My wife tells me that like six times. Did you wash your hands? I'm 62 years old. My wife's still saying, did you wash your hands? I'm not 12 anymore. But, you know, just basic hygiene is a good way to keep yourself healthy. But this idea, you know, and if, look, people want to wear masks. I don't have a problem with that.
Me neither.
You know, the other day we're out in the park out in the middle of the wilderness and this woman's wearing a mask. I mean, that's fine. If people want to do that. But I'm worried about all the mandates and requirements and shutdowns again, because, boy, those really hurt our economy.
Well, L.A. County is going to – they're right on the cusp of declaring mandatory masks for indoor use and in large crowds outside. But last night, Beverly Hills, their city council, don't you know, they voted unanimously not to enforce it if it comes back. So now people are starting to push back a little, which is a good sign.
There is. And you know, by the way, sometimes when people are wearing masks, that may be that they were tested positive themselves. And so I appreciate that. You know, if you're contagious, then it's a good thing if you're wearing a mask. But look, my only point is I hope we've learned some of the lessons from COVID. The lockdowns, the shutdowns did not work. They did not slow the transmission of the disease. And I never actually answered your question, John, about whether the they're doing this because they can get more money.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look into that because you might be right, because Illinois needs money, right?
Yeah.
So they may think, oh, we'll declare an emergency. We'll get more money from Washington.
Right.
Oh, I'm sure that's what's behind it.
Here's a question for you, Mr. Moore. After Trump being in D.C., you think he's running again in 2024?
I hope so. Republican, I hope so. I mean, I think, you know, what's really, you know who I really hope runs for president in the Democratic side?
J.B. Pritzker.
Pritzker. I'd love, I mean, yeah, throw me in that, but we're actually hearing some chatter about J.B. Pritzker, the worst governor in America. Well, maybe not the worst, the second worst governor in America. He's gonna do for America what he's done for Illinois? He's going to do for America what he's done for Chicago?
Well, he's funding everything. He's the money bags. He's the money bags right now for the Democrat Party.
Yeah, he is. I mean, all he does is, you know, that's exactly right. And all they care about is, you know, the cha-ching, cha-ching. But, you know, I love this. How about this ticket for the Democrats for 2024? Gavin Newsom and J.B. Pritzker.
I know. And everything will be shut down forever.
Exactly. Well, I'll be huddled in our houses, you know, in the fetal position in the corner of the room. I mean, so come on. But by the way, speaking of governors, I was just out in Florida for the Sunshine Summit. I was the lunch speaker for Governor DeSantis. My gosh, I mean, Florida is just absolutely doing incredible stuff. And I think, you know, I'd love to see that. Let's put Pritzker against Ron DeSantis.
Yes.
See what the voters want.
Well, no, but if you had a choice, though, between Trump and DeSantis, I mean, who would you choose? Where does your loyalties lie?
The top one.
I know.
You know, I'm undecided. I like them both. And look, I know people are disturbed by Trump's antics and behavior, and I'm not happy with what happened on January 6th. But I got to tell you this: every day that Joe Biden is in president and seeing what he's doing to the economy, I think, you know, more and more people saying, you know what, Trump was awfully good on the economy, wasn't he? I said, yeah, he sure was. Maybe I didn't like some of the crazy things he said, but on the policies, yeah. And incidentally, I know we're running out of time. Have you seen they keep drawing down more and more oil from our
streets? Yeah. I was going to tell you that.
Run out.
Waking up this morning, Reuters saying the Biden administration said it's going to sell an additional 20 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Who's buying this oil? Do we know? Which foreign country?
It's stockpiled. Oh, China is. China is. And here's the thing. This is, you know, we're moving into August. August is, of course, everyone knows, is the hurricane season, especially in the southern states and in the Gulf states. But what if we get one of those hurricanes that comes in and takes out one of our major refineries or takes out one of our major drilling platforms? Then we're going to go to the, you know, the reserve, because that's why we have a reserve for natural disasters like that. And we're not going to have any oil left.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the cupboard. It's going to be there because they keep drawing it down. For a non-emergency, because we're not drilling it here at home. I mean, none of this makes any sense to a rational person.
Yeah. Stephen, I got a fix for the Trump-DeSantis thing. Trump-DeSantis 2024. End of story.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be a great ticket. That would be a heck of a ticket. The best governor in America and one of our best recent presidents. I mean, I love that. I mean, the question is whether people can forgive Trump for his crazy behavior on January 6th. And you know, we'll see. But I got to tell you, I mean, when you just look at the policies, folks, put aside his antics, when you look at what would happen in America, how we, you know, we rebuilt the economy, we have big wage gains, the lowest poverty rate ever, lowest unemployment rate ever, that those were good times, and they're looking good compared to where we are today. But I'm gonna make your prediction. I think we will be tomorrow, we will be officially in a recession. And the question is whether we can get out of it. And the first way to get out of it is to get rid of this president.
Yeah. All right. We're going to have to leave it there. Stephen Moore, thank you so much. Noted economist and author of Trumponomics. Also, most recently, Govzilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Thanks, Stephen.
Bye, guys.
Take care, Steve.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Amy Jacobson here, John Anthony in for Dan Proft, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Having
I
a good
hope
time.
You're having a good time and informational and informative time as
yes,
well.
Of course. Okay. I'm just scared of the monkeys that are attacking people.
Yeah, what you were telling me that during the break. What's going on?
58 people in Japan have been attacked by biting, clawing by monkeys in Japan. 58 since July 8th.
58?
Yeah.
All right, should we worry about it here? Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-oh. Hey, they may travel.
We always have to worry about something. So Mayor Lightfoot unveiled her new plan to try and keep the Chicago Bears, you know, in Chicago because it's been that bad under her watch that she even lost the Bears. And her plan is to put a dome or partial dome over Soldier Field at a cost of $220 million, I believe it is. Who's going to pay for it?
This is an incredible asset. Been here for almost 100 years. One way or the other, we have to invest in Soldier Field.
I'm sorry, excuse me, $2 billion? $2 billion, that's what it is.
Well, I don't want to speculate and get ahead of ourselves, but we believe in collaboration and shared value and investment.
That's what her response is. Who's going to pay for it? Basically, the taxpayers are going to pay for it. Because remember, 20 years ago, taxpayers coughed up $400 million to renovate Soldier Field, and it really didn't do much. I mean, you know, it's still the smallest stadium in all of the NFL. And it still doesn't have a dome, so we're not going to ever get the Super Bowl or NCAA Final Four or any of that good stuff unless she puts a dome on it. Now, naming rights, that's a problem because former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn yesterday launched a drive to prevent the renaming of Soldier Field.
And we dedicate something to the memory of service members who gave their last full measure of devotion to our democracy. We don't change the name.
So what would you do with that? We're asking Paul Vallis, who is running for mayor of Chicago, former superintendent of the Bridgeport Public Schools and the Recovery School District of Louisiana, former CEO of both the School District of Philadelphia and Chicago Public Schools, and again, candidate for mayor. Good morning, Mr. Vallis. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. So, it's good to know that we're really focusing on these really critically important issues. Obviously, since we've addressed the issues of violent crime in Chicago, and of course, since we provide such quality school choices, and since the mayor has gotten our property taxes and sales taxes under such control, it's so nice we can spend time on these type of things, isn't it?
I know. I mean, was it the putting a dome over Soldier Field 2 days ago yesterday? It was bringing the Democratic National Convention to Chicago. She's doing everything but what she is supposed to be doing, which is to be reducing crime, making safe schools, making effective schools, and lowering our property taxes. And it sounds like we're going in the opposite direction.
Well, let me make a couple points about the Bears. The mayor's had over 3 years to work with the Bears to develop a plan to address their needs without imposing additional obligations on the taxpayers. Because as you know, we're going to continue to pay for the cost of the first stadium renovation long after the Bears depart. I believe the Bears are gone. I don't think they're coming back. And her plan to renovate Soldier Field, regardless of whether or not the Bears stay, and she's talked about spending upwards to $2.2 billion for this massive stadium makeover that will then have a stadium anchored by a soccer team. I mean, please, are we serious? I mean, are we operating in the real world? It's interesting. She said, of course, that if the Bears leave, she'll work to bring a second NFL team to Chicago. First of all, you know, the NFL is a very, very close club. And they decide, you know, the NFL oligarchs decide where they're going to go, and they would never allow a second team to be located in Chicago. I think bringing a second NFL team stands a better, Putin leaving the Ukraine and Crimea simultaneously probably stands a better chance than the NFL allowing a second team to come to Chicago.
So she's in over her skis, and she has always been, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, you know, talking about $2.2 billion stadium renovations, when the city's going to face a post-COVID financial crisis, when we still haven't addressed the issue of how we're going to fund our pensions, And when we have a police department that has been significantly degraded, and you see it in the escalating violent crime, I mean, this is just a big diversion.
So what would be your first task when you're elected mayor? Because it's a juggernaut, and a lot of people wonder why you're even doing it in the first place.
Well, you know, there are a number of things that you can do very quickly. With respect to the Chicago Police Department, I would do three things immediately. I would fire Brown and his leadership team and promote officers who are respected from within. That would be needed as a first step to restore confidence because, as you know, close to 1,700 police officers have left just in the last 18 months alone. I would then return to this concept of community-based policing where you push the officers down to the local police beat so every police beat is covered. And then I would restore proactive policing, which in effect means we want the police officers to arrest people who are committing crimes. And that's not what we're doing. There's been a 70% reduction in arrests over the last 2 years alone. And, you know, Wirepoint came out with a report that said that the police were only able to have cars available for something like 50% of the high priority 911 cases last year. And so that's a, you know, that's a prescription for catastrophe. On the other hand, on the school side, I would get the schools in the game of playing a role, a public safety role too. And that would entail us keeping school campuses open through the evening hours, 6 days a week, obviously on the holidays and through the summer days. I mean, there's 600 school campuses. I know I built 78 of those schools, and I built 125 campus parks around schools. And there's no reason why those buildings should be closed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and closed on weekends and obviously closed through the bulk of the summer. You can easily bring community-based activities, recreational activities, enrichment activities to the school campuses to give the children a safe place to go. And for the high school students, I would reintroduce this concept of work study, paid work study. That would allow the high school students to get involved in high school-based work study jobs. Crystal Ray does it. The city could have every single agency under its control, as well as businesses that get heavily subsidized by the city. They could invite the labor unions to create work study jobs that the district could then subsidize. And that would get tens of thousands of kids off the street, keep them off the street, to keep them involved in the best environment young people can be, particularly teenagers. And that's in an environment where they're surrounded by working men and women. I think these things can be done. They can be done quickly. They can be done unilaterally, and I think they would really help us not only address the underlying conditions that contribute to crime, but also give the police the capacity to keep us a greater capacity to keep us safe.
Yeah, and Paul, I also think that consent decree needs to be relooked at. I think that consent decree has handcuffed policing in the city of Chicago so much. I would hope that someone would really go back and look at that and challenge parts of it, because when you look at how it was crafted, you know, who it was crafted for, I really believe that needs to be looked at. And I know many police officers who feel the same way.
But, you know, both Brown and Carter, they have now been telling the commanders that they have no control over things, that the entire police department is being governed by the consent decree. The consent decree didn't give us incompetent leadership.
Correct.
The consent did not strip the local police, beats of their needed police officers. The consent decree did not put police officers on these horrendous, sometimes 10, 20, 30 day consecutive work schedules without a day off or put perhaps police officers at the last minute be told that they have to work 12-hour days. And the consent decree has not kept the city from creating a witness protection program.
Yeah,
there is no program to protect witnesses or victims. So there's a lot of things that can be done separate from the consent decree that would improve the situation, just reversing some of the really dumb things
that's
the police department has
done. No pursuit policy.
Yeah, no foot pursuit, car pursuits. There's no pursuits. I mean, how are you going to catch them?
Yeah, you know, Amy, the rules and regulations, I know I come from a family of police officers. Both my sons were police officers. One is a firefighter. My wife was a police officer. And there are so many rules and regulations that you have to consider before you initiate a pursuit. And there's all sorts of rules and regulations that you have to follow that trigger the ending of a pursuit. Who in their right mind would even want to chase somebody when if you don't follow any number of these steps, you can actually be disciplined and reprimanded. So at the end of the day, there's so many things that simply can be done unilaterally and quickly. And it really has to begin with the replacement of Brown and his leadership team.
Yeah. Amy, I can't believe you guys didn't mention NASCAR coming to Chicago, though.
Oh, well, you know, listen, why should we worry about the Bears departing when we have NASCAR coming? Just think about that. I mean, what a vision for the city. Daniel Burnham, of course, is the architect of everything good that the lakefront has become. Has probably turned over in his grave multiple times. First of all, building that stadium and not putting a retractable roof in the first place. And now, of course, NASCAR. I mean,
But she did it without any input from the alderman. I mean, is that legal? They don't even know the alderman the alderman whose racetrack is in their ward. You know, they're like, well, what's in it for us and how much revenue is it generating? And she left them all in the dark.
Well, look, I mean, you know, they complain that they're leaving her in the dark, yet they continue to vote to ratify or to vote or to support her on almost every single issue. Case in point, Alderman Beal was trying to get the speed, raised back to 10 miles an hour instead of 6 miles an hour. They wrote more speed camera tickets last year, $2.8 million, than they have city residents, and that was defeated. The local aldermen, both Hopkins and Riley, screamed bloody murder over the decision over the casino selection site, but yet that was ratified with what? 5 dissenting votes. So they can complain all they want, but those complaints have to be translated into legislative action. And the city council continues to ratify our budgets. They continue to do nothing on the public safety side, and they continue to be to follow her dictates. And yeah, there may be a few more dissenting votes than usual, but at the end of the day, I don't know if she's had a single ordinance defeated so far, and every ordinance that's emerging from the council that she's decided to block, she's been able to successfully do so. So the council has to stand up.
Yep. What does school look like in the fall? I mean, we're less than a month away. The last press conference I went to with CEO Martinez and Mayor Lightfoot, they both said, We need to have, you know, our kids need to be in the classroom, show up for the first day of school, blah, blah, blah. But then turn around and say, but if they're not vaccinated and they've been there and there's an exposure, they have to be quarantined for 5 days. So when the heck is this ever going to end?
It'll end when we have a new mayor, quite frankly, because I mean, it's amazing. You know, the National Education Association had a conference, I think it was in the state, I think in July, and they spent most of the time. They weren't talking about what the schools are going to do to make up for the lost instructional time that has done serious damage to children's academic levels, or what they're going to do to get the schools involved in keeping children safe. No, they wanted to talk about the importance of continuing to be on guard and to be prepared and to continue to follow these kind of COVID safety procedures and COVID mitigations, which is really a buzzword for doing what you said, being prepared to go remote, being prepared to force the kids to mask again. So they're not focusing on what's important. The taxpayers need to bear in mind that we're spending $9.4 billion on a school system, the equivalent to $28,000 a kid. And it is a system that offers fewer and fewer choices, and only one in six children in the Chicago public schools, based on the most recent preliminary test scores, are meeting state standards. Of course, the union, as an answer to that,
stop testing the kids.
Right. Don't test them so we don't know. Bury our heads in the sand. All right, Paul, we're going to have to leave it there for today. Where can people get more information about your campaign?
People can reach me on my website, Paul Vallas, V as in Victor, A-L-L-A-S, 2023.com.
PaulVallis2023.com. Paul Vallas, always a pleasure, and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Paul.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
All right, good Wednesday morning. Amy Jacobson here, John Anthony, and for Dan Proft.
Hey,
you
hey.
Can listen to John Anthony every Saturday from noon to 3 on Black and White Radio here on AM 560. So thanks for joining us. And I don't know if you've heard about monkeypox. Oh, yeah. The WHO has declared monkeypox a global health emergency. So get this. Last week, we had 1,400 cases in the United States. And all the United States, what, 330 million people?
Yeah.
And now that jumped to 35K. So I'm not 35, I'm sorry, 3,000 in our entire country. And I don't understand why it's a, you know, a global health emergency. But now we have a new face. Yeah. The CDC has assigned Dr. Jennifer McQuiston to be, you know, the Dr. Fauci, Fauci's, you know, HIV, Fauci's COVID. And Dr. McQuiston is now in charge of monkeypox.
Right now, we have over 300 people who are working on this response 24/7.
And, you know, they can't keep up because they think the numbers are going to double every week and double and double and double. And why is this happening?
We're coming out of COVID, right? It's been 2 years of people not traveling, not attending parties, not having fun. And I think there's some amplification of this that's happened as a result of people going out, living their lives.
Oh, and they're living their lives because we had a doctor on, John, a few weeks ago who said, well, this all started with a male orgy in Belgium, and that's how this started spreading. But it's not just, you know, the gay community. Other people are getting it.
Somebody has lesions inside their mouth or throat. They could potentially shed virus. There are only so many staff members at CDC. So when we stood up the monkeypox response, we had to pull people out of COVID.
But the difference is they have a vaccine for it. I see you grabbing your mouth like, oh. But it's mostly, you know, in the gay community. But if you have an open lesion or a sore and you lay down or use a towel and then somebody else uses that towel, the likelihood of getting monkeypox is high. That's why 2 kids out of 3,000 in the United States have monkeypox. It's from their parents or whoever, birthing person, kidding, or mom or dad, dad or dad.
Oh, boy.
Using, you know, sharing linens and towels. So that's the thing. But guess what we have to do, John?
What's that?
We gotta flatten the curve.
Uh-oh.
We'd like to see the curve not keep going up, but flatten out and then eventually start to go down. So that would be my hope in the next 3 to 6 months.
And that's realistic if people take precautions now.
Yes.
These people, I'm telling you, if you fall for it, America, on shame on you.
For more on this and everything else going on in the world, let's welcome back our good friend, Ed Morrissey, senior editor for HotAir.com. Good morning, Ed. How are you?
Good morning, Amy and John. Hey. Thanks for having me on today.
Good. So I don't know if you've written about monkeypox, but how is it declared? And people are not even buying into this if there's only 3,000 people in the United States that have monkeypox.
This is one of those things that I think is more about making sure that you've got funding going to the right agencies than it is about a real public health emergency. But, you know, monkeypox, like you said, there's vaccines for monkeypox. People who are inoculated against the smallpox vaccine are against smallpox, you know, myself included, because I'm old. I was one of the people that was inoculated against smallpox, already have antibodies and protection immunity against it. So this isn't AIDS. This isn't COVID. This is, you know, a manageable issue that is really centered in certain specific behaviors. This isn't an aerosolized respiratory illness. This is a direct contact type of illness that can be controlled. And so I think the idea that you're going to create a global health emergency over monkeypox is more of a function of bureaucrats trying to rationalize demands for more funding.
Oh, it's always about the money, right?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
All right, so another thing that happened last night, Merrick Garland sat down with Lester Holt, and there's a possibility that Trump now may be a target in the DOJ's criminal probe. Here's part of that interview.
You said in no uncertain terms the other day that no one is above the law. That said, the indictment of a former president, of perhaps candidate for president, would arguably tear the country apart. Is that your concern as you make your decision down the road here? Do you have to think about things like that?
Look, we pursue justice without fear or favor. We intend to hold everyone, anyone who was criminally responsible for the events surrounding January 6th, for any attempt to interfere with the lawful transfer of power from one administration to another.
So what does that sound like to you, that there is going to be a criminal investigation or there's not going to be one?
Well, I think we know that there's a criminal investigation. The Department of Justice has kind of made that clear. The question is, what's its scope and who are its targets? The Washington Post had an article that came out last night. You know, it was sort of like this blockbuster report. The Washington Post is saying that the DOJ is looking into Donald Trump's actions and communications in regards to its January 6th investigation, I think mostly focusing on the whole fake electors thing. But that doesn't even say that he's actually a target. If you're going to be investigating targets like Rudy Giuliani and John Eastman, you're necessarily going to have to know what the president was writing and saying about it at the time. So I'm not necessarily sure that this was a big, huge development. And I am still not really convinced that this is the direction that they're going to wind up going, because I think the potential for backfire here is higher than the potential for success. You know, what Garland said last night, just to address what Garland said last night, I mean, technically speaking, that's his role. His role is not to play, is not to make a political decision about this. His role is to do investigations. Now, I don't think that DOJ is apolitical by any stretch of the imagination, but at least that's what they're supposed to be. It's really up to the president to make a call as to whether or not you're going to do, you're going to take that turn. And I don't know that the Bidens are going to be terribly anxious to set the precedent that it's open season on your predecessor. When you've got the Hunter Biden stuff going on,
right.
You've got the whole Biden Incorporated stuff going on. When there's now some evidence of, you know, stuff going back to the big guy, I don't think that Joe Biden is anxious to have him or his family go through that process when he gets out of office, which looks a lot sooner than maybe he originally thought it would be.
Yeah. Hey, what's going on with Durham? I mean, when is that investigation going to come to a close, or when will we start learning what his findings throughout this investigation?
I know, John, I've always been a little skeptical about the whole Durham thing. First off, I am not a fan of special counsels, because this is usually what happens with special counsels. They don't actually produce prosecutions on the central matter. They just end up getting, you know, a few, you know, tangential process crimes, you know, like, obstruction or lying to investigators. That's as far as they usually go.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I expect anything else from Durham. That's not a reflection of Durham. But I just don't see where this is going. And if there was something to go to, I mean, it's been, what, 4 years? I mean, these things stretch on for years. And this is also, you know, not to be too cynical about this, but special counsel appointments also tend to drag on for years. And it's about the money. You know,
yeah.
It employs people, you know, and so it tends to have this self-perpetuating aspect to it. It's the reason why I really dislike special counsels, and I really wish that we would have a better way of dealing with conflicts of interest than appointing roving, unaccountable prosecutors to just simply self-perpetuate their own existence.
Yeah. And when it comes to what's happened on January 6th, when you look at, you know, putting a woman who I think they said she has cancer and all that, who was just in there taking pictures. I mean, are they even looking to not prosecute people like that who was just there taking pictures? Now, I believe go after the people who broke windows, you know, tore down whatever, went in and took stuff off out of the offices of these congresswomen and women. But come on, especially
the people that were allowed in by the Capitol Police. I mean, have we gotten that far as a country where everything is all about punitive when it comes to government?
Well, I think that first off, I think you have to establish that that's all they did, yeah. Right? I mean, defenses make a lot of claims, and there might be evidence that that person did something more inside the Capitol. I haven't looked into that case in particular. But I think that usually what happens in these things is you go after the smaller fry, and you use them to roll up the bigger fry, right? And that may be what the Department of Justice is doing here. I'm not really sure where this is going. I do know that that some of the later indictments are more serious, and I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to build a witness, a witness backlog to prosecute some of the more serious cases, and that may be what this person is caught up in. But yeah, I mean, you want to temper justice with mercy where you can, right? And it gets back to the old adage, you know, let the punishment fit the crime.
Yeah.
And you know, certainly being in there was, you know, illegal. There are ways to prosecute that don't make you a felon for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but if you're allowed in, I'm a former cop. If you're allowed into a place, that's not trespassing. If the Capitol Police allowed them in, I don't see how that's trespassing.
Well, okay, so if they were just allowed in, right? If they just walked up and said, "Hey, can we go in?" The cop said, "Yeah, sure, go ahead and go in." Yeah, I would say that's a positive defense. But if the cop stood aside because of a threatening crowd, I think there's it's certainly not necessarily a voluntary decision by the cop. Yeah. Now, under duress, I think is the term I'm looking for. So I think all of those factors go into that, and certainly these people have very good defense attorneys. I actually know a couple of the defense attorneys that are involved in this, and they're very good. So they're going to be looking at all these angles and trying to make that case to the court, to the jury, I'm sure.
So Ed Morrissey, senior editor of HotAir.com, did you watch both primetime January 6th committee spectaculars?
I haven't watched any of them. And
really?
Amy, I'm somebody, when I was 11 years old, I was watching the Watergate hearings. So it's not like I'm not a nerd, okay?
I was like recording Ronald Reagan with the Iranian hostages every night.
This is the reason why we're friends, right?
Exactly. You
know, we're peas in a pod here. But I haven't watched any of them because, you know, first off, this is not the proper committee structure. You don't have cross-examination.
Exactly.
This is really just a public beating.
I know, but yeah. So this White House aide, Cassidy Hutchinson, I was so into her testimony because, you know, she's like, Trump tried to grab the wheel to turn around to, you know, instead of going back to the White House, to the Capitol. The man's in a limo. Now, has she ever been in a limo? Physically, that's not possible. You can't, and then there's a barrier between you and the driver. I mean, give me a break. Well, so her claims are unraveling, and they're finding out that, you know, she's still a big, huge Trump supporter, but they got other messages from her that completely contradict what she said during primetime.
Well, also, I mean, this was hearsay, right? That wasn't the proper form to bring that type of testimony in. And if there had been a adversarial setup on this committee, which every committee has, except for this one, the adversarial side would have brought that out, that she was actually testifying to what somebody else told her that somebody had said to that person about what happened in the limo. So it was a game of telephone, basically. But
that wasn't the soundbite.
No, of course not. Of course not. But that's the reason why it fell apart so quickly, too, is because it turned out that what she was told was hearsay and it wasn't accurate hearsay, and the people who were involved in it said it didn't happen that way. And so it burned her credibility, at least publicly. I don't know about the committee,
done.
But it certainly burned her. Yeah, I mean, her credibility is toast.
She'll write a book.
So right. Yeah, everybody will write a book.
Why I Lied. An after school special.
No. My Adventures in Limousines.
Oh, good Lord.
The Logistics of Limousines, Chapter 1.
That's actually not a bad title.
Logistics of Limousines?
It isn't a bad title.
No, you said in no uncertain terms the other day.
Oh, excuse me. I don't know where that came from. That was a mishap. When this is it all over now? You probably don't even know when this January 6th committee buffoonery is going to be done, do you?
Well, I don't think they know. they're talking about doing more in the fall. I mean, I think that they're going to try to run this thing right through the midterms and maybe even to the end of the year. But I don't think people are paying attention. I'll just say this really quickly. People don't understand the radically different electoral context that is in place here in 2022. We've got runaway inflation at 40-year highs. We've got a president who is deeply unpopular. We've got American households that are absolutely melting down financially because of the economy that's going on right now and the erosion of buying power that's been going on for the last 15 months. This isn't 2010. It's not 2014. It's not 2018. This is an electoral context that we haven't seen in 40-something years.
Yeah.
And I don't think people grasp the focus that the economy is going to have in this, and the January 6th committee hearings, the Supreme Court decisions, all of that is going to be by the wayside because people are concerned about their pocketbooks, about their savings, about their retirement, and they want a change. And that's the context in which all of this is taking place. This is almost a non sequitur to what people are actually concerned about in this election.
But don't forget, that's why they want to change the Electoral College. That's why they're having these meetings and talking about introducing a bill, or I think they've already introduced a bill to change the how we elect our president. That's more important than people losing their livelihoods. There's, you know, kids and more people committing suicide. That's more important than the real stuff that's actually happening and affecting real people.
Right. And besides which, you can't do that with a bill. It requires a constitutional amendment, and that's not happening.
All right, Ed Marcy, we're going to have to leave it there for today. As always, thanks for joining us. And editor of hotair.com, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.